Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Bat Radio. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
Because it's like Batman-rific week on news.
We've got the bat signal up and flying here in Colorado Springs.
Yes, between certain things that came out and some stuff we're going to talk about over in the Geek Label segment this week. Yeah, we'll get there. So let's start off with this last weekend's theatrical releases.
Well, you had some trash and you had some treasures. On one hand, you had the reboot of Alvin and the Chipmunks. Why? You had Will
That's
Smith.
That's a treasure, right?
No, I'm getting there. And then, before Will Smith, let's get the crap over with. Queen Latifah in The Perfect Holiday. Ironic title.
Is that like a Tyler Perry movie or something?
No. It's
it
about
looks like one.
A woman falls in love with a Santa Claus, a storefront Santa Claus. So it's kind of like, imagine Bad Santa as a love story. Plus you got Queen Latifah as like the good angel helping them fall in love, and Terrence Howard is the bad angel helping them fall in love. Moving
Why?
On. I know. It sounds kind of like that John Travolta movie, Two of a Kind. And then you've got Will Smith and I Am Legend, and then Francis Ford Coppola's first movie in almost literally 10 years, Youth Without Youth, starring Tim Roth in limited release, which I can't wait to see.
Yes, and we saw I Am Legend on IMAX yesterday.
We did.
It was worth seeing it on the IMAX.
Yeah, beautiful
absolutely.
Film.
Yeah, and the sound, the use of sound in like the 30 channels or whatever that they have in the theaters, absolutely used to the max.
Yes. Should we talk about I Am Legend?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. You've read the book, so I want you to go first, because a lot of geeks have read the book. I have not. So
all right, I'm trying to keep them as two separate entities, because, I mean, from the opening scene, it's clearly this is not Richard Matheson's I Am Legend, which is, you know, one of the great, great vampire books of all time. What they do right, I think the first hour of the movie is just so solid. I thought, wow, this is really looking like it's going to be one of the best films of the year. Powerful scenes hopping on top of one another. Will Smith, I thought, was in very good form. The depiction of an empty New York City, I thought, was frighteningly believable. I thought the chemistry of all things between Will Smith and his dog was quite good. I thought it was really terrific for about an hour, and then I thought the movie really got soft.
We won't spoil the
exact
point.
No spoilers at all. Just to say, I think maybe the test market people are like, well, we need some comic relief. We need Will Smith to do his thing. And to say, I mean, the ending really just, I mean, not only is it completely different from the book, but I think it kind of diffuses the whole point of the film, which is about the value of the human race. I think the ending, without giving anything away, it's the movie heads in a direction that's almost so hopeful. I think it just kind of...
After I talked to you, it's pretty much in stark contrast, diametrically opposed to what how the book ended.
It would be like having a happy ending for Fight Club. I mean, as much as you want a happy ending for Fight Club, Fight Club really wasn't meant to have that kind of ending. And I think it's the same thing with I Am Legend. I Am Legend really should end the way the book ends. But, you know, without comparing it to the book, I think it is a great movie. I think it falls short of being like a classic, but overall, a great film.
I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I kind of got the feeling after talking to you and your student, Jeff, this was kind of like doing iRobot all over again. It was a fun movie. iRobot was a fun movie. It was a great movie. It was a blast to be at. Had no business being called iRobot. This I could almost see being the same thing, because talking about some of the themes with you offline, I'll just say, this doesn't seem like it's much like the book at all. Mm. Taking that as you will, I'm not going to try to say that it's like the book or not, since I haven't read it. I agree with you. The first hour is riveting. It's freaky. I wasn't sure how they were going to set up the... creatures he has to deal with, I'll put it that way. And I really liked how they did. You know, he already knows what's going on. He's got everything taken care of pretty much, and he's just trying to live his life. And I thought it was great. Right about that 1 hour mark, they made this sharp turn of direction.
Yeah.
I will say, I don't think that it was necessarily bad, but it could have been a heck of a lot better.
Yeah.
It felt like they were like, oh, we've only got 15 minutes of movie left. Let's finish this up.
Yeah.
Because we're walking in, oh, it's a 100-minute movie. Yeah, that's counting the 6-minute Dark Knight trailer and all the trailers before it and right. the credits.
This movie could have been longer.
It should have been longer, I think.
But some great sequences. I mean, the scene where Will Smith has to go after his dog and into that very dark place. I mean,
that was
scary.
Freaky.
Scary sequence. That was really well done.
That's the scene that I was thinking, you know, with the IMAX sound, it was all around you. You're like, oh.
Yeah, it was very frightening with that huge three-story screen. Yeah, I know. It was a great experience in IMAX. Like, my father-in-law was saying he didn't want to come with us to see it because IMAX often makes him really queasy. But I think this is a perfect movie for IMAX, because you get all the detail, and there's so much detail. Detailed in this movie.
And at the beginning of the movie, I was worried that I was going to get motion sick. I've never had it happen at a movie. You know, I get a little bit of a headache here and there, like with IMAX and the IMAX 3D Beowulf.
Sure.
But the beginning, when he's hunting the deer, because big deal, that's the opening scene, it was so shaky cam that I almost was like, oh, I'm not going to make it through this movie.
Yeah.
But it was really well done. You know, I'm it's not going to make our either of our top tens, I don't think.
No, no. But I got to say, better than I thought. And I personally like it better. I liked it more than iRobot, but you still like iRobot better.
Well, actually, you know what I thought about it? As far as like a solid movie, I think I Am Legend is a better film overall. I liked iRobot because it was still a fun movie. Mm-hmm. And you had Alan Tudyk being amazing in that film.
Yeah, he really was.
He saved that movie more than Will Smith did. So. Sure. In this case, the entire movie falls squarely on Will Smith's shoulders, and I think he carries it very admirably. He does great in it.
Yeah, and for the most part, he's really playing this really deeply anguished character and does a fine job of it. He doesn't, I think, in iRobot, kind of rely on his Fresh Prince of Bel-Air persona.
Exactly.
I think really hurt that film.
Exactly. In this case, you know, I really do recommend people go see it. If you're going to see it on the IMAX.
Definitely.
It's
well
worth it. Yeah,
if you got IMAX near you, definitely go see it. And I got to say, for someone who is, I was seriously doubting Francis Lawrence could pull this off. I think for the most part, he really pulled off a great film. And I was not expecting that from the director of Constantine.
Yeah, now getting one quick thing before we move on.
Sure.
I know that they've fundamentally changed the character's origins. That's all I'll say. If you read the book, you probably already know what the difference is, but do you think that it worked well in the context of this movie?
I do. I really wish they hadn't changed it just because, thanks to movies like 28 Days Later, it's just not as fresh as it should or could have been.
Fair enough.
It's not as scary as it used to be. And I was thinking about this morning, you know, how we see the empty New York Times Square. I was actually there this summer. I'm just thinking, the movie takes place in, well, let's see, what year does the apocalypse take place? Was it like
2009.
Thank you, 2009. I have a feeling that Hairspray and Legally Blonde the musical won't be playing anymore in New York in 2009.
Although there is one very cool little spoiler. Yes. We're not going to ruin it, but keep an eye out for it near the end of the Hunting of Deer.
One of the nicest little Warner Brothers in-jokes of the year. Yeah,
it's
done.
It's like, ooh, I'm going to hold them to that date of May of 2010.
That's right, yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think the geeks are really going to enjoy that little nod that Warner Brothers did
well,
for
especially
us.
Since it's pretty much the exact logo from the comic book,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, very cool stuff. All right, let's move on. The DVD releases, because I've seen a few of those too, and
that's right,
got some good stuff.
Very interesting stuff this week. First of all, of course, Blade Runner in HD DVD and Blu-ray, and for those of you who don't want to get the suitcase, a 4-disc special edition.
Yeah, 5 discs otherwise. Good night.
So it's like minus 1 disc and a suitcase, so might as well just get the freaking suitcase.
Yeah,
you can't go wrong. Gosh, one of the coolest DVD releases of the year, no question. Once Wonderful film Once that came out over the summer, one of the most critically acclaimed films of the year.
It had a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's
100% on the critics' picks. The critic, like the featured critics' picks, was 100. I was holy crap.
And, you know, I can't say I disagree with that at all. It's a great film. And we'll talk about that in a second. The Simpsons movie, good film. Rob Zombie's Halloween, just in time for Christmas.
The unrated cut, yeah. Yeah, you're right, just in time. Wow.
Unrated cut. Great. And
you're like, please don't be the work print. Please, you know, don't be the work print.
You know, and I like that movie too, but I really don't want to see the unrated cut. No thanks. The very underrated, but definitely become one of the cult films of the year, Stardust. A movie that will never become a cult film of any kind, Underdog with Jason Lee. We'll get more of that sellout later. Balls of Fury with another sellout, Mr. Christopher Walken. Why? Rush Hour 3.
Wow. Thankfully, it's like you got some good stuff, and then it just goes downhill.
Well, this list is going to pick up in a second. Here we go. Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, excuse me, Volume 2. Braveheart, the Special Collector's Edition, great movie. National Treasure, the 2-disc Special Edition. I wonder why that's coming out now. I wonder if it has a ticket to National Treasure Book of Secrets.
That couldn't be coming out the next Friday.
No. Couldn't possibly be coming. No. Disney would never do such a thing. Hatchet, a horror movie that has every horror movie name in it, except for Bruce Campbell. But, aha, Bruce Campbell fans, you've got Evil Dead, the Ultimate Edition, also coming out that week. Amazing. And then finally, really one of the most impressive special editions I've seen, the That's Entertainment Complete Collection. So you got That's Entertainment 1, 2, and 3 in HD DVD and Blu-ray.
Which I haven't seen it. It's stuff like that, though. I would love to see that in high def.
It's fantastic.
The glorious, colorful, so you know, these musical numbers done in high def.
And a lot of them that have been completely left out of movies are like, you know, cut scenes. They've got the original Scarecrow Dorothy dance number that was cut out of The Wizard of Oz. I mean, to name just a few. I mean, these movies have amazing, amazing stuff.
Do they have the original ending to It's a Wonderful Life? I'm sorry.
I wish they would. I know you can find that on the Saturday Night Live Christmas special. They've got it.
Probably, yes. Yes. So, yes. You know, it's funny. We're talking about musicals this week.
Yes.
And it's kind of very fitting. We were doing it mostly because of Sweeney Todd coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But you've also got Once. You've got That's Entertainment.
Go Walk Hard.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, there's that too. That's, you know, you got me there. Okay. So there's a lot coming out. Okay, once. We have to talk once.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched it Wednesday night.
I gotta say, I called Dave, and then I could tell his focus was somewhere else, and then he said he was watching Once, and I thought, oh, of course, because that movie is such a hypnotic experience. So like, he called me later, and he couldn't stop talking about it.
Well, it's funny, because it starts off looking like a student film.
Yeah.
It's not shot in, you know, pristine. It's not shot in Spectrovision or CinemaScope.
Right.
It's like someone took their mini DV camera out, and from the first scene when he's like threatening the guy with much profanity not to steal his money while he's playing the guitar, I was like, this is fun. Oh, crap, is Steph going to like this? But like from the second the first song gets played, I was sucked in.
Yeah.
Beautiful music throughout the entire thing. I will get to this later, but it got completely boned when it came to a certain set of awards coming up.
Yeah, we'll get there.
It's a phenomenal film. What I liked is that the people that they got aren't actors. They're musicians. But yet they were so personable, and to find out that, you know, they're together in real life, that makes a lot more sense because they just played off each other so well. It was so good. I just, you know, it's the kind of movie, like, they could have wrapped it up in about a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
It went 85 minutes, and it was worth it, though. It was good that it went that long. It shouldn't have gone longer. It felt like the perfect time to finish.
Definitely.
And I loved it.
Yeah. Great film. Naturalistic performances from the two leads. You know, and it's kind of an anti-musical in a sense. I mean, there is one sequence I remember in the theaters. There are a few people who are very uncomfortable with it. It's a sequence where a young woman is listening to music and she's walking down the street, and the scene goes on for quite some time. And I know some people were saying like, this is too much, it's pretentious, too long, but it fits with the flow of this movie.
It's
a very
does.
Special, unique movie. And like yourself, I agree. I don't think there's a moment wasted. I think it ends exactly as it's supposed to end. And I think it's got one of the most beautiful endings of the year.
Absolutely. I love the fact that it wasn't like a stage production, like the producer. Like Chicago, like, yes, Moulin Rouge, like any of the musicals that have come up. It's truly is a musical of a different breed.
Yeah.
And I can't recommend it highly enough.
Yeah, it's really one of the few art house movies that came out this year that really deserves the hype. It you know, it deserves that 98% approval rating.
It might sneak into my top 10. It's hovering right about that edge because it was just that good.
It's a very special film.
Yes, and then move on to Stardust. Buy it. We watched it again last night.
Embrace it.
Yes. It was amazing. And here's the best thing. It has a blooper reel. I actually laughed at it.
Wow, that's a rare thing.
It is.
Blooper reel that's actually funny.
Yes, and it has a little half-hour making of. Usually they're just kind of BJ pieces. You know, oh, right, everything's great.
BJ pieces.
It was. They usually are.
That's exactly right.
But and this kind of was, but it actually offered a lot of insight into the production, and you have some talks. So they had interviewed Neil Gaiman some, and it was just cool. Really cool. Very well worth checking out.
Awesome.
In The Simpsons, how do you go wrong?
You know, for a movie that didn't quite blow everybody's mind, but was actually one of the few movies this summer that was consistently funny, very entertaining, and actually quite smart, good film. You can't go wrong with the Simpsons movie.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and move on to the news.
Yes. Well,
you got more news. I've just got one story, and boy, is it it's a doozy.
It's a good one, yeah, and we'll get to all the Batman stuff in a little bit. The poster for Indiana Jones and the Temple of the Crystal Skull came out Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I want to say Temple so badly. And the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull came out this weekend.
That's a long title.
Yes, it really is. But I'm sure as the release date comes closer, it'll fall off the tongue a little easier. And the style is very much almost exactly in line with the poster art for the teaser poster for Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. I got to say, I was very happy to see it.
Very cool. I have not had a chance to see it yet.
It's great. It's great. Yeah, it looks... I'm excited. My excitement for this movie keeps on building and building. If the trailer is knock your socks off, great. As all the news that's preceded it, this could be, for me, it's still the movie of 2008. I can't wait to see this thing.
Wow, and there's some serious stuff coming out next year.
Oh, yeah, we got to get to that on a future show. Yeah,
yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, we'll do it probably, maybe even next week.
Yeah, next week
we'll
just talk about that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. We might as well go to the other trailer, the other poster news. The Speed Racer poster came out, and who cares? Okay, moving along. Apparently it's a lenticular. It's a lenticular. It's got some 3D. Until they give me a trailer that doesn't blow as much as that last one did, I don't care.
Who gives a crap? Poor Emil Hirsch. Thank God he was in Into the Wild. Otherwise, his career would pretty much be at its end.
Yes. Okay. Ugh. Move on, sir.
All right. Yes. Well, The Dark Knight. Let's just get to The Dark Knight fun stuff. Let's just talk about yesterday. Attached to I Am Legend is the prelude to The Dark Knight. It's a 7-minute short film, which I'm not sure if they're going to include it in the film itself or if it's just shot specially.
I have a theory that they're not going to, but simply because the bank looks like the exact same bank interior as the teaser trailer for Spider-Man.
Sure.
It does. Like, did you catch up on that too?
I did. You whispered that to me during the movie. I'm like, you're exactly right. Yeah,
it looks exactly like it, but it was so... after it was over, you're like, what movie are we watching again?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's right, the Will Smith one with the vampires.
Yeah, with the vampire rap.
Right.
You know, I have to say, I did have one serious problem with the ending of I Am Legend.
Okay.
I mean, I could have lived with the fact that it was a dream, but the fact that he was actually in, like, J.R. Ewing's body, and they used Isaac Hayes' voice, it was just too much. I don't know. Sorry. But no, essentially, the
my brain just exploded.
Continue. Yeah, the funny thing is I actually had Richard, you know, J.R. Ewing's, the actor's name in mind, and I totally forgot.
Larry Hagman, yeah.
Missed the joke and still had to get it in. I apologize.
Oh, good stuff.
But the actual short is involving a heist that the Joker plans out, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, yeah, it's absolutely riveting. It looks fantastic, amazing on IMAX.
Well, especially on the IMAX, because, you know, you see the Warner Brothers logo, you see the DC logo in the center, and suddenly you get this full screen city shot of outside of Gotham in the daylight, and you're like, whoa.
And you get the music going. It really sets the tone very nicely. It's a very exciting, very violent sequence.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that they got away with that. But then I realized, you know, there's no blood. They never actually really show anyone getting shot.
Yeah.
They show the shooter, not the shootee.
Exactly. It's more of the mayhem aspect of it. But yeah, it's good stuff. And without giving much of a spoiler, you do see Mr. Ledger as the Joker. And it's a nice, very nice payoff.
Absolutely. My favorite bit of it is when we were talking about the suit being seen in a stark white background and it looks crappy. In like a sundown situation, you know, near dusk, it actually looked just fine.
Yes.
Which really made me happy, because I'm like, if it's going to look bad, it's going to look bad on an IMAX screen. Right? And it wasn't the case. I was really thrilled with that.
Yeah. I think all the stuff that we have this weekend and talk about The Dark Knight pretty much erases all our doubts about this movie, at least my doubts.
Yeah, let's talk about the theatrical trailer, because it's not officially been released at all. It snuck its way out on YouTube.
Yeah, somehow somebody put this up.
All over the place.
Yeah.
Like, every time it get torn down by Warner Brothers, someone else would post like 16 copies of it, so.
Yeah, so sorry, Warners, but we just really want to see this thing.
It's a really good trailer, too.
Yeah, it's a great trailer.
It's like, hello, Commissioner Gordon. You're like, ah, you're a sick little guy.
Very exciting. Very exciting stuff. Yeah, Maggie Gyllenhaal, everything just looks like it's going to be a perfect film. I'm a little concerned about Aaron Eckhart as Two-Face, just because we haven't seen anything about it. So I'm starting to worry if that's going to be like the black goo element of Spider-Man 3. I'm a little worried about that.
I could see them setting him up as the next villain.
Mm.
That's my guess. Just me. Since they kind of set up the next villain at the end of the first one,
yeah,
they could be doing that. So have you got anything else? Because before we get to the Golden Globes.
Nope, not a thing.
Okay. I have to mention this. In front of once, actually, I believe it was, they had the new 10,000 BC trailer.
Ah.
Oh, does it look so awful
the
still.
The new Roland Emmerich dinosaur epic.
Oh, it looks awful. like the first trailer wasn't bad enough. This doesn't help its case. That's all I'm saying. It's Apocalypto with dinosaurs. That's what it looks like still.
Okay. And
it's kind of like Magneto. It's going to be Schindler's List with special effects. You know, these things are just never good
high
things
concept
going to happen.
Heaven, yeah.
Oh yeah. All right. Let's move on to the 500-pound gorilla of the crappy Golden Globes Awards list.
You know, it's like I need to be nice here, because I'm about to join. Hopefully, within the next few weeks, I'm going to be part of the Associated Press. But at the moment, I'm not. So I look at some of these decisions.
Does that mean you'll actually have a vote in some of this crap?
Well, if it does, I hope it counts, because I swear some of these nominations are just ridiculous. My word to any film critic at all listening to this, whether you're strictly online or whether you're completely legit or whether this is Roger Ebert listening to us, imagine that. Please
right.
Remember that there are movies that come out before September. Remember, there are 12 months in the year. You know, the movie season does not begin in September. I can't believe the choices that were made. Let's just go down the list.
This yeah, is just, sure, why not?
It's ridiculous. All right, American Gangster, good film, but best of the year. Atonement, which is getting so much good word. I have yet to see that. Eastern Promises, the David Cronenberg film. The Great Debaters, the Denzel Washington drama that's kind of being thrown out at the last minute. Not a lot of publicity for that one yet. Michael Clayton, the George Clooney film. New Country for Old Men, the new one from the Coen brothers. And There Will Be Blood.
You're right. Nothing did come out before then.
Yeah, I mean, for Pete's sake, I mean, okay. I know I'm like the last man in America who still thinks Zodiac is still the best picture of the year.
You're kidding me? How did this not get some love?
Zodiac, you know, over, come on, American Gangster. Gone Baby Gone didn't get a nomination. The Assassination of Jesse James, which I thought was a sure thing, didn't get a nomination. And out of all the Iraq dramas, no one got nominated. I mean, especially in the Valley of Allah, which I thought was a sure thing, but... No.
Interesting.
So moving on, best motion picture, musical, or comedy, much broader category. You got Julie Taymor's Flawed but Interesting Across the Universe, Mike Nichols' Charlie Wilson's War, Hairspray, Juno, and Sweeney Todd.
Okay, so I can roll with Sweeney Todd and Juno. Although I have to be full disclosure here, I looked through the entire list. I've seen one of these movies.
Okay, I got to say, I'm really ticked off that Waitress was not nominated for Best Picture. But no love for any Judd Apatow movies here.
There's no love for Fido.
None.
Oh, come on. None. I mean, Billy Connolly was awesome in that, if nothing else.
I think Best Picture would not be out of the question, honestly, if anybody would have seen Fido.
Well, and wasn't there talk about The Mist possibly even being...
Oh, I would have loved that. Not for Best Comedy, but yeah, I would have loved
it. I mean, going back to drama,
I agree with that. I think The Mist should have been up for Best Picture, too. I agree.
Yeah.
Best Director, you got Tim Burton for Sweeney Todd, the Coen Brothers for No Brother for Old Men, No Country for Old Men, Julian Schnabel for The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, Ridley Scott for American Gangster, and Joe Wright for Atonement. Very, very respectable list, and I'm sure when the Academy Awards happen, this is probably exactly what the list is going to look like. Although, you know, Ridley Scott has directed much better films than American Gangster. The Coen Brothers have done at least 10 movies better than No Country for Old Men. A great movie, but I'm still on the overrated. Yeah, I don't get it. Like, I thought it was a good movie, but one of the best films of the year. I'm not in that party.
No Tarantino yet. For Death Proof? Sorry.
Why not? That's an excellent point. Excellent point.
What? No love for Disturbia?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I mean,
okay, that one was purely a joke. I do apologize for that.
Shia LaBeouf, best actor. Yeah. All right, best actor for Transformers. Best actor in a motion picture drama, George Clooney for Michael Clayton. Daniel Day-Lewis for There Will Be Blood. James McAvoy for Atonement. Viggo Mortensen for Eastern Promises. I completely agree with that one. And Denzel Washington for American Gangster. No love for John Cusack, who, I mean, you know, obviously no one's going to nominate him for 1408, which even though he's extraordinary in it, but Grace is gone. He's fantastic in that. No nomination. And Brad Pitt. As Jesse James, and the best performances of his career, I think, in Assassination of Jesse James, no nomination there, no love.
Two words, Adam Sandler, Reign Over Me. What the heck? He was amazing in that movie.
Even Don Cheadle in Reign Over Me. Yes. Don Cheadle was fantastic.
Well, I can see him. Well, that's when we get to supporting actor.
Right.
I'll get there.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Here we go. Best actress in a motion picture drama. You got Kate Blanchett, Elizabeth, The Golden Age. Julie Christie, Away From Her. I've heard excellent things about that performance. Jodie Foster in The Brave One. Does not deserve to be nominated for that film. Angelina Jolie, A Mighty Heart. Again, I thought she was miscast in that movie, honestly. I could not forget who I was watching in that film. Keira Knightley for Atonement. My big thing is I honestly think Charlize Theron has not given a better performance than the one she gave in The Valley of Allah. I can't believe she wasn't nominated for that, but Jodie Foster was nominated for The Brave One.
Well, and I'll go out on a limb here. I wasn't a big fan of the movie, but Ashley Judd was amazing in Bug.
Yes, thank you for mentioning Bug. I couldn't agree with you more. I think she should have been nominated for Bug, especially more so than Kate Blanchett. Blanchett is an excellent actress, but I thought she kind of went over the top in Elizabeth, too.
Yeah.
I don't think that's her best performance by far. I think that's one of her more hammy, give me an Oscar performances.
And that's what I hate is that these movies, like, it's an obvious Oscar grab.
Yeah.
Oh, but let's give it to them anyway. Got to be freaking kidding me.
Yeah, and you know,
I'm glad we didn't see like Larry the Cable Guy for Best Actor. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised. But
there have been some weird ones. I remember like Antonio Banderas was nominated for Zorro. You know, as much as I liked Zorro and Antonio Banderas in that movie, that's not an award worthy performance.
About Seth Rogen, Knocked Up?
Thank you.
I mean, there's a bunch of stuff out here that came out, like you said, before September. That's worth at least considering.
I'd even say Jonah Hill for Superbad. I mean, these are...
Well, that's... Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, we'll get there too. Yeah. Right, okay. Yeah, he's all on my list for that.
Okay, best actor in a motion picture, musical, or comedy, Johnny Depp and Sweeney Todd, Ryan Gosling in Large and the Real Girl, Tom Hanks and Charlie Wilson's War, Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Savages, and John C. Reilly in Walk Hard, The Dewey Cox Story.
And, you know, I have a feeling that's going to be very worthwhile for Walk Hard, but again, no love for Fido, because seriously, that was really...
Yeah, Fido is a special movie, and I think once it hits DVD, well, actually, I think maybe a year from now it'll catch on and have a huge, huge cult following. But right now, it's just one of these movies that just got completely lost.
And I understand, you know, it got released in like what 6 theaters nationally, right. So I understand that. But still,
I could see it becoming another Donnie Darko. I could really see a huge, huge cult following that one up.
Yeah.
Best actress in a motion picture, musical, or comedy, Amy Adams for Enchanted, Nikki Blonsky for Hairspray, Helena Bonham Carter for Sweeney Todd, Marion Cotillard, Cotillard, forgive me, Marion, for Lovey and Rose, and Ellen Page for Juno. I couldn't agree more for Ellen Page, and especially for Amy Adams, who really really made a very difficult and impossible character to play, very real and very sweet. Nikki Blonsky for Hairspray, as much as I liked that movie, and her performance was fine, but this is like the...
There's no love for Scout Taylor Compton. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I know. Wait, no, I didn't. No, wait. Comedy. My bad. I just thought Halloween was a comedy.
Unintentional comedy.
Oh, hang on. Can we go back to Best Actor here?
Of course.
Quick?
Go ahead.
Well, have we gotten to the Best Supporting Actor?
We're getting there. Who are you thinking?
Okay. Best Actor, I guess you could go supporting either way, but 3:10 to Yuma got completely snubbed.
Completely screwed. Yeah. Russell Crowe.
Yes. Russell Crowe for that movie. I mean, Christian Bale was even more amazing, I thought, because, I mean, Russell Crowe is always great as the smoldering badass. But. But seriously, Bale did awesome as like the guy who's just trying to do the best thing he can for his family and do what's right.
I think that's a better movie than American Gangster, honestly. That should have been up for Best Picture. Yeah, I would say so. Wow.
Okay,
yeah,
then.
Absolutely.
All right.
Best Supporting Actor. This is where it gets a little better. Okay. Casey Affleck in The Assassination of Jesse James. I couldn't agree more, even though he got completely screwed for Gone Baby Gone. Yavier Bardem in No Country for Old Men. Yes, that's an amazing and scary performance. Philip Seymour Hoffman in Charlie Wilson's War. But not for Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. That's unfortunate. John Travolta in Hairspray. No. And Tom Wilkinson for Michael Clayton. He was very good in that. But John Travolta for Hairspray?
Over McLovin and Don Cheadle.
Come on.
That's all I got to say. I mean,
absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
Like last year, you know, Ben Affleck was my guy I'm championing. This year, it's like rain over me. The performances in that were so amazing. Fido, I know it doesn't have a chance. I'm still going to throw love its way because it was so good. And, you know, Andrew Curry did amazing creating that entire world. But, I mean, Rain Over Me was so much better than people give it credit for, I thought.
I agree with you.
Especially the performances.
The performances were extraordinary. Yeah. And you know, and I...
So upset, losing speech capability. Sorry.
I love Don Cheadle's performance in that movie because unlike, you know, Sandler obviously was really, really acting with a capital A, but even though it was a great performance, but I thought John Cheadle was really the emotional center of that whole film. And if nothing else he's done, I thought it was just a really nicely restrained performance. And I think I seriously got screwed. That whole movie got seriously screwed.
It did. I mean, I'm not going to say it's the best movie of the year, but it definitely deserves some love. And
For the acting, yes, absolutely. Best Supporting Actress in a Motion Picture. The nominees are Cate Blanchett and I'm Not There. Julia Roberts for Charlie Wilson's War. Saoirse Ronan for Atonement. Haven't seen the performance yet. Amy Ryan, yes, for Gone Baby Gone. And Tilda Swinton for Michael Clayton. That's Marty's pick for Best Supporting Actress of the Year. Tilda Swinton for excellent performance in Michael Clayton.
I'm not going to complain.
Julia Roberts for Charlie Wilson's War. Why? Because she wears a bikini? Come on. Give me a break. Cate Blanchett, yes. For that movie, for playing Bob Dylan, yes. That's an amazing performance. But Julia Roberts, no, no, and no. Best Screenplay, Diablo Cody for Juno. The Coen Brothers for No Country for Old Men. Christopher Hampton adapting Atonement. Ronald Hardwood for The Diving Bell and the Butterfly. And Aaron Sorkin for writing Charlie Wilson's War, also adopted from a previously published book. Sure, yeah. I guess. I mean, most of these are adaptations.
If it's going to be, okay, yeah. Okay, you said adaptation, so I'm going to say it's Stardust.
Sure.
Damn it.
Why not? Why the heck
it
not?
Was a solid movie.
What
know?
About Sweeney Todd? How hard is that to take that ridiculously bleak and dark, twisted little musical and make that into motion picture? That should have been nominated.
Very true. Very true.
Best Animated Feature. The nominees are B-Movie, Ratatouille, and The Simpsons Movie. Interesting.
I guess I'm glad Shrek isn't on the list.
Yeah, it could have been worse.
But, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Ratatouille has got it, I think. I mean, B-Movie's got thrilling animation, but I don't think it's really all that inspired. And The Simpsons Movie, you know, I think the screenplay is better than the animation.
Yeah.
But Ratatouille's got it. I mean, that Ratatouille is a terrific film. Best Foreign Language Film, 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days from Romania. Diving Bell and the Butterfly from France, that'll probably win because that's currently the favorite. The Kite Runner, Mark Foster's film, Lust Caution, the Ang Lee film from Taiwan, and Persepolis from France. Interesting that wasn't nominated for Best Animated Film.
Okay.
But yeah.
That's right, because that was done in the same style as Renaissance, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Best Score, this ticks me off, Atonement, Eastern Promises, Grace is Gone, Into the Wild, and The Kite Runner. Now, Grace is Gone, yeah, Clint Eastwood did the music to Grace is Gone. It's a beautiful score. Interesting enough, Clint Eastwood did it.
Interesting.
Mark Isham, his music for Lions for Lambs, one of my favorite scores of the year, not nominated, but I guess that whole movie got screwed anyway, so I see a pattern. But here's probably the one that made us both the angriest, the original song category, and I've got a few for you, too. That's How You Know from Enchanted, cute song. Grace Is Gone from the movie of the same name. Guaranteed from Into the Wild. Despedida from Love in the Time of Cholera. Who the heck nominated that movie?
They just wanted someone to say that and try to say it with a straight face at the ceremony. Idiots.
Love in the Time of Cholera. Don't nominate it. That movie is Oscar screaming out for an Oscar. Come on. And then Walk Hard from Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. Not the song Duet, the one where it's the whole thing is a double entendre, where John C. Reilly is saying, "In my dreams, you're blowing me some kisses." You know, the whole thing is like all these sleazy double
entendres.
That's
why I want to see this movie.
Yeah, but strange enough, Walk Hard is not Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. Now, before we get to Once, I got to say my favorite song from any movie of the year was Pop Goes My Heart from Music and Lyrics.
You know, you've got to have some love
not
there.
Nominated for best song. That ticks me off because I freaking love that song. That song was genius because it was meant to be a parody of an 80s song, and it's perfect. It's
Finding My Way Back Into Love isn't a bad song.
Yeah, exactly. These songs are, it's like the music in That Thing You Do. They're perfect parodies. And for what they are, they're really nicely done songs.
So last year's crime against musical humanity was The Fountain getting no love. Actually, yeah. I think it did get nominated for the Golden Globe at least.
It did, but then the Oscars said, screw you guys.
Falling Slowly, how do you not put this on a best song?
Yeah,
that
song's amazing. Everybody talks about this soundtrack. There was one very overzealous.
You know, I'm on Amazon. I'm going to play a little bit of the clip of the song just so people can hear it. Okay. Why the heck not? Because, you know, okay. We got nothing else better to do, but it's still doing its thing.
Yeah, let's wave our fist in the air for Once. I'm all for it.
Games that never amount to more than they're meant will play themselves out. Take this sinking boat and point it home. We've still got time.
So that's just a little 30-second clip, but it's an amazing thing. Here's the interesting thing. I'm going to say the word emo, and everyone's going to roll their eyes and think Dashboard Confessional and whiny little girls.
Yeah.
This is almost an emo type thing, and that is truly an emotional soundtrack. Yeah. And it really strikes chords with you emotionally. And I am outraged that it did not get any love.
And yet they decided to nominate Walk Hard. Shame on you, Golden Globes.
Well,
that's so
Walk
stupid.
Hard could be kind of funny. You know, sure I can understand.
I'm sure it's a good song.
It's like Blame Canada.
Over Once? Yeah, exactly. No, yeah. That's just no. I agree with you. That is an outrage. I was going to say before there. I remember one very overzealous critic who not only said that Once was one of the great motion pictures of all time. I couldn't go quite that far, but in his review, he said that once he heard that particular song from Once, he thought he'd probably heard one of the greatest songs in the history of movies. I wouldn't go quite that far either, but this is one of those really, really...
Easily the past 10, 20 years. Easily.
Enrapturing movie song. Yeah, I agree. One of the best movie songs in a long, long time. It's a gorgeous song. Why was the movie not nominated for anything? Even the performances are excellent in this film.
Absolutely. I can understand not Best Picture because, frankly, there isn't that much story to it. And I'm fully willing to admit that. But dang it, that's a joke.
But The Great Debaters gets nominated, but not Once. Come on.
Okay, you got me. All right, well, we're like a half hour into the show already, so we better take a quick break so we can actually get to our topic of musicals. And
we're going to listen to some Once music, and we'll get right back to you.
Yeah, and then we'll come back crying. It's okay.
The new and improved Geek Label Radio. We've rebuilt it.
Better. Stronger. Faster.
Every week, join the Kingfish.
He likes to dip into the icky.
Super producer Billy Flynn.
Let me see if I can crack some code.
And the Vicar.
I give you the Vicar. The campaign art.
As they rub down in Vaseline.
Holy crap.
No! Evil, evil, evil.
Join hands.
So good, I actually now have to go home and clean my pants.
And share their feelings.
I was taking them on four at a time.
I don't remember any details.
In a totally non-threatening, hetero kind of way. Hear from industry veterans.
This is Tracy Hickman.
Hi, this is Jim Lee.
Hi, this is George Takei.
And your hosts, as they opine pointlessly.
Let's talk about farting in public.
Oh, let's.
Yes.
About comics, gaming, movies, and geekly news.
Orville Redenbacher has risen from the grave.
I knew it. You owe me $6.
Geek Label Radio.
I like it. It's good.
It's a total waste of time. But what the hell? So's EverQuest.
Oh, that just happened.
Another fine product from geeklabel.com.
Do a little dance.
Make a little love.
Get down tonight.
That's all we're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of scary that I can lip sync along to the ending of that ad.
It's just one of the funniest things on internet radio right now. Yeah. Thank you, guys. It's always makes me smile.
Yes. And just for the Vicar, we're talking musicals this week. Yay. Actually, just because it's time to get to them.
That's right. Well,
And what constitutes a musical? Because we'll get into that later, too.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that. I mean, we'll start with traditional musicals. I mean, at one point, this was the biggest genre in all of Hollywood, musicals and westerns. When Hollywood first got rolling back in the 1920s and such, I mean, everything from anything with Astaire and Ginger Rogers and all the way to the James Cagney, Esther musical Footlight Parade, one of the great, most beautiful movie musicals and one of the best films that Hollywood ever made. For a while, these films, they really were just the ultimate cash cow in Hollywood, really. I mean, like now, you know, sequels and comedies are really the biggest movies going around. But for a while, musicals and westerns were the biggest thing there was. And that's why so many of these movie musicals back in the day have such great production values. I mean, everything from Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, Singing in the Rain, The Music Man. I mean, these were the big films of the day. Then you get to the 60s with the ultra-mega musicals, whether they were just big productions or they had special effects. Films like West Side Story, The Sound of Music. Whoever thought of opening up a musical with a helicopter tracking shot? But the Sound of Music has it. Mary Poppins with its state-of-the-art special effects. My Fair Lady with its first use of Ashley Simpson lip-syncing. Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry, I'm not a fan of My Fair Lady. Obviously, I'm skipping around here. You get to the 70s. It started to fade off a little bit with Julie Andrews did a big budget musical called Star that really, really hurt the genre and was such an expensive flop at the time. But then you've got Grease, which was a musical that was so immensely popular, not to mention the underground sensation, the Rocky Horror Picture Show. It seemed like the movie musical was really going to flourish and last. And then the 80s happened. You've got Grease 2. It gets worse. The Francis Ford Coppola film, One from the Heart, which was a very embarrassing, expensive flop. Much more embarrassing for all the right reasons. Can't Stop the Music, the Village People musical. Have you ever wondered what Ooh. YMCA looked like as a big production number? This is your film. Xanadu, one of the worst films of all time, with, sadly enough, Gene Kelly of Singing in the Rain fame. Actually, the Golden Raspberry Awards, you know, the Worst Movie of the Year Awards, actually started because the guy who founded it said he came up with the idea, he saw a marquee where the double feature was Can't Stop the Music and Xanadu. So he thought, oh, we need to award these films.
Ouch.
You get to the 80s. The last gasp of great movie musicals was, ironically enough, Frank Oz's Little Shop of Horrors, which was a minor hit when it was
released.
I thought
you were going to say it was The Wiz.
No, no. Well, actually, I skipped that for good reason. That's a crap movie and a big bomb, I might add. Movie musicals looked like they were officially dead when Disney, in 1992, released their film Newsies. I'm sure you remember that. Christian Bale selling papes during the Great Depression. It was such an embarrassing flop for Disney. It seemed like movie musicals were completely dead and forever buried. 4 years later, Alan Parker had the nerve to make a Vita into a movie musical, followed by the Woody Allen film Everyone Says I Love You, the Bjork film Dance in the Dark, one of my favorite musicals, the great film Moulin Rouge, and then you've got all the Broadway adaptations, Chicago, Phantom of the Opera, Dreamgirls, Hairspray, and now Sweeney Todd.
And the producers.
And the producers, that's right. And obviously there's a ton I totally skipped over because we don't have that much time. We wasted so much time
venting and ranting and raving
about the Golden Globes.
Yes. So I've got three favorites. You've mentioned at least one of them. Singing in the Rain.
Yes.
Donald O'Connor. That's why I love that movie.
Oh, amazing. That sequence is amazing. Make 'em
Laugh. Make 'em Laugh is like the best, my favorite musical number of all time.
It's incredible.
Yes. You mentioned Jimmy Cagney. Yankee Doodle Dandy. I'm a sucker. It's, you know, it's blatantly patriotic.
Do you watch it every 4th of July? Or?
No. We haven't watched it in probably a couple of years. I need to get it at some point.
It's a great film.
But, you know, it's a film that about all the right things about being a patriot.
Mm.
You know, as opposed to possibly grabbing by one cause. And I'm not really trying to be political about that at all. Just, you know, it seems like now patriotism is being defined as one certain thing as opposed to what it actually meant back then.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I think that's very cool. And, you know, I mentioned it last week, so I'll just mention it. White Christmas.
Yeah. Great film.
Yes.
Great perennial holiday classic.
Yes. So, okay. Going by these standards, is this how you would define a musical to be?
Yes.
Okay. There are a couple movies here. Now, Once is obviously a musical.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in the traditional form at all, whatsoever. Music and lyrics? Not so much?
No. I would say romantic comedy with musical interludes.
Okay. Here's the one that you could possibly make the biggest case for, That Thing You Do.
Mm. That Thing You Do is almost like, I mean...
Except it's the same song used 8 times, but still.
Well, still. I mean, there's a lot of different musical numbers. And I mean, it's almost like, would you say Walk the Line is a musical because it's, you know, flush with music, or La Bamba or The Doors. Would that count as a movie musical? I almost have to say that it has to be any movie where it either comes as a surprise or it completely fits with the story, where all of a sudden characters just burst into song.
Like Spinal Tap.
Like Spinal Tap.
You actually would consider that to be...
I would consider...
See, it's walking that heart, that really tough. Fine
yeah,
line.
Yeah, yeah, because I would almost say that's a satire.
Yes.
I would say first and foremost a satire. But
okay.
But that's a tricky...
Because not only do they sing the songs, they actually play their own songs.
Right.
You know, that's something that, you know, even musicians in movies today don't do.
Yeah, when movies have, like, actual musical numbers and set pieces, because, like, some of the scenes, like Walk the Line or even, like, even something like The Bodyguard, they're, like, little numbers that you don't really even get the entire song. They're just, like, little snippets, and they move on. Yeah, because okay. I think, like, it seems like music and lyrics, you other than the first one that opens up the movie, you really don't have, like, a full song.
Okay, because we're talking once a whole lot here, but sure. It really does walk that very fine line in that there are really no overblown, there are no musical numbers. There's the one scene where the girl walks down the street from the shop singing the song mm-hmm. with the lyrics that she just wrote, and that's about it. So... But I still fully consider it a musical.
I would, just because of the scene where they're at the piano and you essentially see them create that song. For me, it almost feels like something out of Singing in the Rain, in a sense.
Okay, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Okay, that was really all that I had, because you really could try to make a case, like A Hard Day's Night. That'd be more of a musical.
Oh, sure. Even like last year, Robert Altman's final film, A Prairie Home Companion. I know a lot of people consider that to be a musical. I would say no. It's
a comedy.
Yeah, it's a comedy with musical interludes. But
okay,
yeah, it's
fair enough.
You're absolutely. It is a truly fine line. I mean, obviously, you've got the easy ones like Phantom of the Opera. There's rarely a moment where they're actually talking in that film.
Yeah, exactly. So what are your favorites? I listed off my three favorites.
Oh gosh, I gotta go with Singing in the Rain. I think it's not only one of the best musicals, but one of the best films of all time. One of the great, great satires of Hollywood, and not only the Danny Kaye number, but also the Gene Kelly number of the with the title song.
Donald O'Connor.
Donald O'Connor. Yeah. I mean, oh gosh, when Gene Kelly sings that number, I mean, it really is just one of the great, great movie sequences of all time. I really like the Bjork film, Dance in the Dark, directed by Lars von Trier. It's a really strange movie musical. It really, I mean, it's like all of Van Trier's movies. It really kind of deconstructs the whole idea of a musical. The musical numbers themselves are very odd and very beautiful. It's probably the only movie on my list that I would even compare to Once in terms of it's one of the most unexpected movie musicals, but unfortunately, unlike Once, it's very long and it definitely does not have a happy ending. In fact, it left me depressed for days, but man, great movie.
Fair enough.
But you know, I guess I gotta mention Grease, because like my parents always loved to remind me that when I was about 2 years old, like one of the first things I ever said was like, I could always mimic all the songs off of Grease, because they used to play that stupid album all the time.
See, I didn't say anything because I hate Grease. I despise that movie.
Do you like Saturday Night Fever? Did you ever see that one?
No.
Because that's definitely not a musical, but another movie that's always been called a musical. Sick reason.
No. But, you know, we glossed over it. We have to mention it because it has really spurred its own subculture, and that's Rocky Horror.
Okay. I was afraid you were going to say Rhinestone. I'm like, yeah, yeah. I
guess. Whoa, no. Stallone and Dolly Parton. Oh,
and Match Made in Hades. Yes. Yeah, no, Rocky Horror. I
really don't consider it to be that good of a movie.
No, I think it's a stupid movie, but the songs in it are fantastic, and that's, I think that's why it has.
And the
following.
Message behind it of being yourself and all that stuff. But
absolutely,
I mean, but this is, you know, it may not be the best movie of all time, but it also is the only musical that spurred this kind of fan reaction, and you know, the longest running movie of all time, pretty much, because it's playing somewhere for the past 25, 30
every
years?
Weekend, no matter what. Yeah, even here in Colorado Springs, we've got midnight screenings of this movie. One of my favorite Rocky,
and it's Billy, one of Billy Flynn's favorite movies too. So
mention it then. Well, I'm sure Billy Flynn knows this. One of my favorite Rocky Horror story is that when Fox, you know, when the movie initially bombed, Fox, you know, essentially just allowed it to become a midnight movie, and you know, all of a sudden they found that people were going to the screenings, they were acting with the movie, they were performing the movie while it was playing in theaters. It became this whole phenomenon. So when they greenlit the sequel, Shock Treatment, which is written by the same guys, and it had O'Brien in it, but it did not have, of course, Susan Sarandon, Tim Curry, or Barry Boswick. They released it in the theaters. It's not a good movie. But Fox came up with this ingenious idea that ultimately backfired. I think it's so hilarious that they even tried this. They actually hired actors to go to these midnight screenings and like act out these Shock Treatment scenes, hoping that it would catch on. It would make the movie an instant phenomenon, the same way that Rocky Horror was. And of course, it completely bombed. These people would get up in front of the movie and like act out the Shock Treatment scenes. People in the audience would be like, "What are you doing? This is terrible."
Fair enough. I've seen it at Hollywood, and I'm like, should I ever watch it?
There is, I think there's like two really good numbers, and probably the best one is the opening number, but it's do you remember that John Ritter movie, Stay Tuned?
Yes.
Where he gets sucked into a TV? It's almost the exact same movie with musical numbers. and it's about as endearing. It's not a terrible movie, but it's Cliff DeYoung is no Tim Curry, to say the least. Like, the whole movie just completely suffers in comparison, and it's just a really forgettable movie, unfortunately.
Fair enough.
But okay. But Rocky Horror, you know, it not a great movie.
You could make an argument that it's been the most culturally impactful musical of all time.
You could definitely make an argument for that. So it's one of the few movie musicals, even if people have never seen it, they know about the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and they know the experience that goes along with it.
Yes, that's why they avoid it like the plague. Sometimes, because you never want to be the first time.
You never want to be a virgin going to a screening of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. That is a degrading and frightening experience.
Okay.
So I've heard. Yeah.
Fair enough. Let's wrap up this topic because we've still got plenty to talk about. Yes. Let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting theaters this week.
Interesting week. A little bit of everything, really, for every possible audience member. This week, you've got the Disney sequel, National Treasure Book of Secrets, Ed Harris and Helen Mirren joining Nicolas Cage and Harvey Keitel.
I thought Ed Harris did his time with The Rock.
I know. Apparently, Jerry Bruckheimer still needs a few hours from Mr. Harris. Sad. Charlie Wilson's War with Tom Hanks, Julia Roberts, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and the Mike Nichols film. P.S. I Love You, Gerard Butler, and Hilary Swank. Tim Burton, Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street, and John C. Reilly walks hard as Dewey Cox.
You know, it's kind of sad, but Walk Hard is the one that jumps out the most at me this week.
Well, I can't wait to see Sweeney Todd.
I haven't seen the musical, but I've just heard everyone raving and ranting about this thing and the movie, so I would definitely want to see it.
Yeah, a little of everything. I mean, I don't think I'd mind seeing any of these, although P.S. I Love You is one of these films. I remember the first time I heard about it, I thought it sounded terrific, but seeing the trailer for it, I got to say,
it looks like it's going to be an excruciating movie.
It looks
movie.
Lame. It looks really, really lame. I love the idea of Gerard Butler doing a love story. I love that it was this bittersweet, almost like the supernatural story. I love Hilary Swank. It's the director of Freedom Writers that she joined with again. It's the guy who wrote The Fisher King, Richard LaGravanese. But I think P.S. I Love You looks really lame. Charlie Wilson's War, I'm just not excited to see at all.
No.
It's almost like a movie I feel like I need to see because it's up for all these awards and everybody says
it's something
good,
I want to see because it almost looks like Tom Hanks doing something semi-comedic. So I'm like, awful.
I miss him doing something comedic. I'll tell you what, the movie it reminds me the most. Well, I'll tell you this: like the last time Tom Hanks did a satire with a big monster cast that opened around Christmas time was The Bonfire of the Vanities, and the last time Mike Nichols actually did a movie that was a political film that had an all-star cast was Primary Colors. So I think they're screwed here.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think the timing is really bad for this film. And National Treasure, I think, is going to just do gangbusters because it's National Treasure. But Walk Hard, I think, might be a real sleeper. If it's as funny as everybody says it was, it could do really well.
But the Golden Compass could make a comeback. Never mind. I can't even say it with a straight face.
Gosh. Yeah.
Dropped, 75%?
26 million to 9 million the next week. Yeah, that movie is poor. I really feel bad for the people at New Line Cinema. I mean,
yeah, they got hosed on that one.
This was like everything I think they were probably afraid that would happen to the first Lord of the Rings movie. I mean, this is that kind of bad casualty situation where all of a sudden it's, you know, all that merchandising, all that publicity, all that money they spent is just gone. It's
flush. Gone. All right, let's move on to the DVD releases.
Sorry, New Line. DVD releases, really bizarre list. Movies that seemed like they were just in theaters like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, one of them you're like, what? I just watched it.
Yeah. David Cronenberg's Eastern Promises, great film, but come on, it was just in theaters like a month ago. Battlestar Galactica, 1980.
The complete series. Ooh. Oh, this was when there's like Jumping the Shark, and then there's this show.
This is, yeah, it's like, who would buy this? This is like Twin Peaks season 2. I remember when they started selling that movie, that series by itself. Season 2 of Twin Peaks is famously not great, and this is even worse.
Oh yeah, I mean it's essentially low budget. So we're on Earth in current day, so we don't have to pay for special effects or scripts. Apparently,
yeah.
So,
seriously, for Battlestar Galactica Completist, yeah, I can see that. But just buying it by itself,
yeah.
Peter Berg's The Kingdom, the first of the Iraqi movies. Probably the last time we'll see that genre in a while, unfortunately. Ben Stiller in the remake of The Heartbreak Kid. I just saw this in theaters like 48 hours ago. I can't believe
it. It was the Dollar Theater to be sitting
at the Dollar Theater.
Still, it didn't come out that long ago.
But you know, having seen the movie, I understand why it went to DVD so quickly. Probably one of the best releases of the week. Dinner for Five, the complete series. Oh. Jon Favreau's fantastic series.
I've watched the first season. It's amazing.
Incredible. Marty was just telling me an episode the other night where it was like Rob Zombie and Roger Corman and all these cool people sitting around talking about horror movies. I mean,
I remember one time it was like Jennifer Coolidge and like Marilyn Manson. It was like someone completely opposite, but it was a great conversation. I love that. I love that show.
That's awesome. I remember Peter Berg being on talking about doing the one with The Rock, The Rundown, talking about just all the horror stories he had making that movie in the jungle with The Rock. And it's great stuff. Great stuff. Finally, The Brothers Solomon.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever. And then at the very bottom of the list, but for completion's sake, because Eugene Levy does need to work, American Pie presents...
Oh, you went and talked about
it? Beta House, yay!
Oh, you had to go and mention that?
Beta House. That was like... I'm trying to think, what college sex 80s comedy actually used Beta House? Was it... It wasn't Animal House, because that was Delta House, but Beta House. It's in one of those 80s comedies. I can't remember. Was it Revenge of the Nerds? I can't remember. But anyway.
So just a little insight into the making of this show. I always go through the DVD list. I'm like, no, we're not talking about this. No, we're not talking about this. American Pie was one of them. He always finds a movie. Like last week or a couple weeks ago, it was High School Musical 2 Extended Remix. I'm like, what? Oh, man.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to reach as wide an audience as possible. So I know there's like some guy in his basement right now listening going, yes, Beta House. So
okay.
The rest of America's like, no, no, no.
Let it die. This is not Lampoon.
Well, Eugene Levy, it's like he's such a talented comic actor. You know, it's a shame that he, you know. I mean,
I'm sure they're making it worth his while.
I hope so. I mean, he was even in The Dumb and Dumber. He was even in that stupid movie. It's like, you know, and it obviously just proves to show that even if Eugene Levy is in it, it does not guarantee that it's even remotely funny.
Exactly. So. Very true. So let's move on to a little bit of listener mail.
Hey.
We've got one email from the good Ethan Vesby.
Awesome.
We've got one email from the good Ethan. He also posted and said that he did indeed say awesome, that Sinbad's greatness cannot be, you know, understood well enough.
So we thought he said awesome or awful, referring to Jingle All the Way.
Yeah.
And he did say, indeed say awesome.
Yes. So he came up with another gem for us. He said, hey guys, on the topic of vampire movies, I have to mention Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter. Sure, I haven't seen it, but with that title, how can it not be awesome? That was done by Tom Savini, I believe, actually made that movie. Yeah. And about Jason Lee and his crappy kid movies, you should know that the guy named his son Pilot Inspector. I didn't spell that wrong. Inspector with a freaking K. So the guy's obviously a little insane.
Hmm.
Definitely a bit
out
there.
Now we know.
Yes.
Thank you, Ethan, for clarifying that for us.
Yeah. And as far as the other movie, I mean, it's worth mentioning just because the title is just so out there.
It just shows that even a wacky title does not guarantee a great film.
Yes. Or the name Tom Savini.
But right, that's
all good. But if you'd like to send us an email, you can hit us, Barry or Dave, at screengeeks.com. You can also hit us at podcast@screengeeks.com. And I guess we'll just wrap this bad boy up. So, until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
Take it easy.